There are lots of people throughout time, really, that have tried to talk about why Jesus came. We celebrated last week him dying on the cross for our sins, but then being raised to life, this idea of conquering death. But what is it about this life that he intended us to have that is abundant? We use this word abundant life. We use the word everlasting life. Now, we get everlasting because that means it lasts forever. So just the basic context of the word, we get that one. But this idea of abundant is difficult for a couple reasons. Number one, abundant is not a word we use a lot. Okay, well, I have groceries in abundance. I have laundry in abundance, okay, but groceries in abundance, maybe not. But we don't use that kind of word. We say lots of. You know, most of us, I mean, if we're just in our general vernacular, the way we talk, well, I got lots of stuff. You know, I got lots of homework. I got lots of work to do. I got lots of things on the calendar. We talk about lots of. Well, this idea of abundant means more than we can handle. That's what abundance really means. So if you went out and you harvested your crops and you had an abundant crop, it meant that there was more than you yourself could use. And so the point of it was is that then you would give it to others or you'd use it to barter and trade for things that you didn't already have. So if I was a corn farmer back in the early 1800s, and I had an abundant crop, it meant I had all the corn that I needed for all the different things that I would use, okay? I'd be able to grind it into cornmeal. I'd be able to use it to help feed my cattle. I'd have enough left over to be able to plant the next year. And if I still had extra after that, that was abundance. And so I might help out my neighbors that didn't have an abundant crop. I might use it to trade for something else that I need. I might sell it in order to have money for certain things that I needed. Abundance means more than what we need and can use. In the day and age that we live in, that is a word that a lot of times we just don't get because most of us think we always need something else. Most of us think there's always something else I need. So we never consider ourselves to live in abundance because we always feel like there's something else we need. Now, if we were to go to 80% of the countries in this world, and we were to show them your life. I don't care how much money you think you have or don't have. I don't care how big the place is you live. I don't care what kind of car you drive or don't. 80% of the world looks at us as Americans and says, you are spoiled, you are rich, you have abundance. Yet if you ask Americans, how many of us are content with the life that we have? Do you know what the percentage is in the latest Barna poll? Less than 5% of people in America are content with where they're at and what they have. And if we're honest about it, that's where most of us are at too. Well, I'd like the next big promotion. Well, I'd like the next step after graduation. I'd like the next relationship. I'd like a bigger paycheck. I'd like a nicer house. I'd like a different car. I'd like different clothes. And it's all these things that we want. But yet Christ came so that we could have life and have it more abundantly. And I don't think he was just talking about this idea of how much material possessions we have, even though compared to the vast majority of the world, we have absolute abundant life when it comes to those kinds of things. I think the abundant life that God was talking about was having such a sense of life, such a sense of purpose, such an overflowing joy in our life that it's more than what we need. So that there is plenty to share with those around us that don't yet have it. See, he didn't come only to give us everlasting life, a life that would never end. He came to give us abundant life. So that when you see those around you that are hurting and that are discouraged, there is enough abundance in your life that you can freely give to others out of the extra that God has given you. So why don't we see that happening more? Why do we see people so concerned with their own lives? Why do we see people so turned inward rather than reaching outward? Here's what I think. It's not what I know, it's just what I think. But I think it's based in biblical truth. I think many of us have allowed our lives to be bound by things that keep us from experiencing the abundance that God has designed for our life. And in almost every one of those circumstances, it's something that we can attribute to choices and decisions that we ourselves have made. Now, not in every situation. We're going to talk about some of that next week. But today, I want us to think about for a moment, if we could, some of the things that we feel limit us, some of the things that we feel hold us back, to use the image in the video, those things that chain us up and keep us from being as free as we would like to be. Many times, it's because of choices that I myself have made. Well, you know, I feel like I don't have enough money to go do this. Well, yeah, it's because you wasted money on that last weekend, and so you don't have enough money for this. Well, you know, I don't have the job that I want to have. Well, it's because you slacked off and came in late 7 days in a row and they canned you from the job that could have been the job you wanted. And so now all of a sudden you're dealing with something that's less than what you want. I don't have the relationship with my kids I'd really like to have. Well, it's because I chose not to invest in them when I had the opportunity. I don't have the relationship with my parents I'd like to have. Well, it's because you didn't give them the honor that they were due. You didn't respect them the way they should have been respected. And it's caused walls and division in our lives. Sometimes there are choices about very real physical things that bring bondage. And I'm gonna just talk about all those things you shouldn't do, okay? I'm not talking about, you know, if you're doing drugs or drinking too much or sleeping around or this kind of thing, even though those absolutely chain and bind us in ways that are so detrimental to our life. But sometimes it's just the everyday choices that we make, the choice to isolate ourselves from others rather than opening ourselves up because we don't want to take the risk of getting hurt. Sometimes it's by just choosing to do just enough to get by rather than giving ourselves fully to whatever it is that we're doing. Remember back when I was in college, I had a particularly tough music load. I was a music student at that time. Some of you music majors will get this. I was carrying 23 and a half credit hours in a single semester. Now, don't get too impressed by that because, wow, is this just going in and out on me constantly? Is that the deal? That's not good at all. Let me like push and mess with things here. And if it keeps going, why don't you bring me a handheld or something? Or Rachel's up here, I can grab it. If it happens again, I'll grab that. I apologize if it annoys anyone else. It annoys me, and that distracts me. Better? Worse? Yeah. About the same? All right, we'll try to hang with it for a minute, and when I get to the point of extreme frustration, I'll throw this at the floor and grab the other one, okay? When I was in college, I was carrying 23 and a half credit hours one semester. And I had a bunch of ensembles that particular, and a lot of you music students know that like for an ensemble, you'll spend 6 hours a week in rehearsal and you get like a half credit hour credit for it. You know, it's like, well, thank you so much for that. Appreciate that. You know, so I'm carrying like this full load of classes plus all these other ensembles. To let you know how cool I was that particular semester, I was playing in a jazz band. Got to do that. Great, cool thing. I was in our concert choir. I was in our chapel choir. Did both those things. I was also the student conductor of the handbell choir. Yes. Just so you understand how amazingly cool I was at 20 years of age, okay? So I was the student conductor of the handbell choir and just had all this stuff going on and things were crazy busy. And I went to this professor that I'd had for a couple different history courses. Showed up to the first day of class and at my college, there was not an attendance requirement for any class. Not a single attendance requirement. But there were negatives to not showing up to class. called failing grades, okay? I mean, that's just kind of the way, like, they didn't say we're giving you a failing grade because of this. If there was a day that, like, you know, seven people were gone, they'd give a pop quiz that was worth, you know, like a third of your grade for the semester and just pop it in there. And so most of the time we showed up, but this one professor, he said, look, this particular class we're doing, it's a lot of reading, it's a lot of book work. I understand a lot of you guys are carrying heavy loads and all, so if there's anything specific, you know, you need help with, whatever, come see me and everything. And so I walked through this professor, great guy, Dr. Horn. And Dr. Horn, I said, hey, I'm carrying this crazy load, and I really don't think I'm going to be able to have very good attendance at your class. And I explained why. I had some things happen before and right after, and I said, so do you have another section of this class that I can come to and sit in on some lectures, whatever? You know, this was long before doing anything through internet, that kind of stuff. And he said, Chad, you read really well. So yeah, he said, everything I'm testing on this semester, he said, it's all from the reading. So there's very little lecture notes that aren't just rehashing what was in the reading. So he said, here are the five test days. Here's the final. I'll see you those 6 days. Oh, really? I didn't know that was possible. It was the greatest class I ever had, period. I showed up 6 days and I got an A. May have been my only A that entire semester. I'm not sure. Okay, but I showed up those 6 times, and it was so cool. It was this thing because there was this, I could invest what I needed to in it, but I didn't have to invest too much. Now, here's what I learned afterwards. There was so much I missed out on in that class. See, I did just enough to get by and get the grade that I wanted to get. But I never got the connection with that professor that I would have had I showed up every day. I didn't get the connection that came from meeting the other students and getting together to study and work on things. Yes, I got what I thought I wanted to get out of the class. I got the grade I thought that I wanted, but I missed out on so much more because I just did enough to get by. And a lot of us in our lives are just doing enough to get by. And that is every bit as much a chain as addiction. It's every bit as much a chain as depression. It's every bit as much a chain as indebtedness. It's every bit as much a chain as so many of the other distractions of our life. So we're going to talk for 5 weeks about chains. We're going to talk today about how do we approach these chains, and why did Jesus come? How did Jesus come in order to help us with these chains? Next week, we're going to talk about what happens when the chains in our life are imposed on us by somebody else. What happens when we're in bondage because of what somebody else has done? And what responsibility do we have to take for in that, and how do we deal with it? Then the last 3 weeks of this series, we're going to talk about dealing with the chains of our past, dealing with the chains of our present, and dealing with potential chains in our future. And I really think these are key. I know some of you are going to be here a couple weeks and you're going home, that kind of thing. I hope you dig into as much of this as you can while you're here, because I think this is so key. I think a lot of us are bound in ways that keep us from experiencing abundant life. So I want to start today in John chapter 8. It's a story that a lot of you know. So I'll paraphrase some of it. I'll read through some as well. John chapter 8, verse 1 says this. It says, but Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. At dawn, he went to the temple complex again, and all the people were coming to him. He sat down and began to teach them. Then the scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery, making her stand in the center. Teacher, they said to him, this woman was caught in the act of committing adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. So what do you say? They asked this to trap him in order that they might have evidence to accuse him. Jesus stooped down and started writing on the ground with his finger. When they persisted in questioning him, he stood up and said to them, the one without sin among you should be the first to throw a stone at her. Then he stooped down again and continued writing on the ground. When they heard this, they left one by one, starting with the older men. Only he, meaning Jesus, was left with the woman in the center. When Jesus stood up, he said to her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? No one, Lord, she answered. Well, neither do I condemn you, said Jesus. Go, and from now on, do not sin anymore. Now, I know a lot of you have heard this story a lot, and You've heard a lot of sermons about it. It's this whole, you know, don't cast the first stone, which means don't judge other people, don't do stuff. Well, some of that we kind of get taken out of context. What really was happening in here was that these Pharisees were trying to catch Jesus. They're trying to catch him up. They're trying to get him in trouble. So they found this woman, and it says in the act of adultery. Okay? I don't get graphic with you, but here's what I know. If you are in the act, it wasn't just one person. Okay? There was a guy there too. They didn't bother to grab the guy. Okay? Why? Because in Jewish law at that time, it's the woman who was punishable by death. And so they wanted to be able to put Jesus on the spot in this ridiculous situation. So Jesus comes and he takes this woman who is in bondage because of the men around her that have brought her there really as a pawn in their game to try to get Jesus. And what all these other, they really don't care about her. They don't care about her life. They don't care about her reputation. They care nothing about her. All they care about is using her as a ploy to get at Jesus. And Jesus steps in, and we don't know what he does. We don't know what he drew in the sand. We know there's some people that have, you know, kind of, well, he started writing down the sins of everybody that was there. Or he started, it doesn't matter. Okay, it does not matter what he wrote. We know that in the process of doing this, everybody that began to accuse her slipped away. All of a sudden, she's not in bondage anymore. All of a sudden, those that were there to harm her, those that were there to hold her captive are no longer there. But see, Jesus knows she's not free at that moment. He says, look, I don't condemn you. Why? Because her sin was out in the open. Her sin was exposed. Her sin was confessed. But in that moment, he said, look, I'm not condemning your past, but as you move forward, stop it. That sounds so simple and so basic, but what he's saying is, stop it. I care for you. I have protected you. I don't want you to die. I don't want you to be harmed. Stop it. And he's not talking about the harm of men throwing stones at her. He's talking about the harm of what she's doing to herself by participating in this sin over and over and over again. The greatest bondage we can ever know is not human slavery, although it is absolutely atrocious. It's not sex trafficking, even though that is horrific on every level. It's not any particular kind of addiction. It's not any particular kind of relationship issue. The greatest bondage that we can ever experience in our life is simply this. It's bondage to sin of any kind. And the sin that holds you bondage may be really public for everybody to see, like what happened with this woman. Or the sin that you experience and you're in bondage to may be something that's private and nobody else knows about it. And on the surface, you look great. On the surface, you look awesome. You show up and people think you have it all together. But you know on the inside, there is junk going on in there that absolutely has you enslaved to sin. Maybe the stuff you're looking at, it may be the stuff you're thinking in your thought life. It may be a relationship that nobody knows about. It may be an addiction that you think you have hidden from somebody else. It doesn't matter what it is. The greatest bondage we can ever experience is bondage to sin. And it is the single greatest thing that steps in the way of our experiencing the abundant life that God intended for us. Why? Because he came and he died and rose again so that he could conquer sin and conquer death. So it's no longer sin that has the ability to hold us in bondage away from relationship with the Father. But sin does have the ability to hold us in bondage in order to harm the relationship. It can no longer keep me from relationship, but it can harm the relationship and it can harm myself. Now, this is how we know it. A lot of times when we look at scripture passages, we get used to hearing little stories, and so we may take the beginning of a chapter, and well, that's one little story. The middle of a chapter is another little story, and the next part of a chapter is another little story. Well, it's all connected. It's all something that happened together. Right after those first 11 verses, he begins to talk to the Pharisees, and he begins to help them understand that you guys just don't get this, all right? And down just a little bit further, this is what he says. In verse 30, he said, look, I've come from the Father. I've come so that you might experience this freedom. You might have this everlasting, abundant life. And then in verse 30, he says this, as he was saying these things, many believed in him. So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him, if you continue in my word, you really are my disciples. He's talking about this combination of faith and action. He says, look, if you believe, then you are going to take steps to follow. You're going to be in my word. This is something that's going to happen. He says, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. But we are descendants of Abraham, they answered him, and we have never been enslaved to anyone. So how can you say you will become free? This is exactly what we just talked about. This was a generation of Jewish people that they weren't enslaved, but there was someone else that did have dominion over them. They were part of the Roman Empire. They may not have somebody cracking a whip over their back, making them build pyramids like they did generations before in Egypt. But these were people that had another power with dominion over their lives. And yet they felt like they were free. See, that's what happens in our lives sometimes. There's this sin that is present and that is chaining us, and we don't even realize it because we think everything's okay. So Jesus responded, I assure you, everyone who commits sin is a slave of sin. A slave does not remain in the household forever, but a son does remain forever. Therefore, if the Son sets you free, you really will be free. Nothing breaks my heart more as a pastor, as a friend, as a dad. Nothing breaks my heart more than to see somebody who is involved in something that is destructive to them. And yet they don't see it clearly enough to step away from it. There is no more helpless feeling in the entire world. I have a friend of mine that's in extreme addiction to alcohol. And when things are going bad, he drinks. And when things are going great to celebrate, he drinks. And when things are kind of blah, he drinks so that things will go one way or the other. And here's the thing, he has no clue that he has any kind of a problem. None. If somebody walked up to him today and said, you know, you're an alcoholic, he would look at him and say, you're an idiot. My dad drank twice as much as I do. See, we put everything in perspective to other people, but that's not what God intended. God knows anything that grabs our attention and holds the love of our heart is something that enslaves us. And I don't care if it's about the fact that you finish your homework at midnight and you're not ready to go to bed yet, so you end up looking at websites that you shouldn't look at. Or if it's because you're not in the relationship you want to be in, and so you search for things outside what God intended for relationships to be, and you end up falling into issues there. I don't care if it's about some sort of physical addiction, whatever it might be. If it's just the idea that you so badly want to be liked that you're willing to talk nasty about other people so that you think other people think more of you. There's all sorts of junk that we get involved with, and it hinders us, it binds us, it keeps us in chains so that we cannot experience abundant life. And so Jesus made this statement. He said, look, there are two kinds of people that live in a home. There's a slave and there's a son. What he means at that time, I mean, they owned slaves. Okay, this was Roman Empire. This was a natural part of what happened. So if you own a slave, you might own that slave for a while and you might sell it off. You might eventually grant it freedom. It may go someplace else. It's a temporary resident. But a son always has a home there. A son is always welcome. There's a difference between a slave and a son. Some of us are choosing to be slaves to sin rather than sons and daughters of God. There's some of us here today that have never broken the chains of sin and begun a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Now, we may know answers about the Bible. We may think good things about God. We may believe in him. We may pray at mealtime, do all sorts of stuff like that, but we've never gotten past that superficial level and said, God, you can have control of my life, even the junk in it. I don't want to be chained anymore. There are others of us that have begun that relationship with Christ, but there's still this little chain. We had a neighbor, the last place we lived, they had a dog that liked to roam a little bit. And so they got one of these shock collars for it and an underground fence thing. You couldn't see the barrier, but there was this electric pulse that would go around the perimeter of their yard. And if the dog got too close to it, and do one of these things and kind of look all funny. You know, and then it would think, well, I have no idea why that happened. So it would try to run through it again. And it would, one of those kind of deals. And eventually it's hopping around on three legs and wagging funny. And it learned after a while not to go anywhere close to the fence. It couldn't see a fence. And after a while, it was real funny. It would be running full steam and just stop. And to other people, it's like, well, that's just dumb. But to those of us that were around it and seen him go, we knew why. He was stopping because he didn't want to get zapped. He didn't want to get hurt. See, he had the illusion of being free. He wasn't on a leash. There wasn't a physical chain holding him, chaining him to a tree or a stake or the porch or anything like that. There was nothing physical, but there was this invisible, unseen element that absolutely had that dog fenced in on every side. And that is what sin does to us. It keeps us fenced in when other people don't see it. It keeps us fenced in sometimes when we don't even see it. I'm convinced that after a while, that dog forgot it was ever confined to the yard because it just thought, this is my whole world and this is all I can do and I am totally free. And some of us have convinced ourselves of that. This is all I can do. This is all I can accomplish. I can never be anything more than this. I can never do anything significant with my life. I can never make an impact on somebody else. This is just my life. And yeah, I'm totally free. I can do whatever I want. God never intended us to be chained. Whoever the Son sets free is free indeed. Free forever. Free eternally. And free to live abundantly. God, I just come to you right now. And God, as Nate comes and begins to lead us in singing, I just pray that we would examine our hearts in this moment. God, sometimes a message like this is difficult because we don't really want to look ourselves in the mirror. We don't really want to think about those things that bind us. We don't want to think about those things that chain us up. God, what held that woman in bondage was not men that threw her in the middle of a circle. God, that was not her bondage. Her bondage was her sin. But yet, God, you proved to us in the actions of your Son that he was willing to forgive and to give hope for the future. You've promised us that who you set free will be free indeed. God, there's some of us today that need to be set free. There's some of us that have never begun a personal relationship with you, and it is my prayer that in a moment when we begin to sing, they would slip out of their seat and they would make their way to the back and they would find somebody to talk to about what it means to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ so they could experience the freedom that comes from being your child, not a slave, but a son or daughter. God, there's some of us here today that we've taken that step, but We allowed ourselves to be chained back up through habitual sin, through addiction, through relationship choices, whatever it might be. God, I pray that today we would take steps away from that God, we would repent of our sin, that it would be out in the open the exact same way it was with that woman, so that you would see it clearly confessed, so that we could put it away and move on with the life of freedom that you have intended for us. God, speak to our hearts. Lead us to response in you. And I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. Would you stand right now? If you want to know what it means to have a personal relationship with Jesus, I beg you, slip out of your seat, make your way to the back where we have some folks there that would love to talk to you this morning. Maybe you're here today and there's one of those sins that when I talk about something that holds you in bondage, something that nobody else knows, you immediately were able to think, he's talking about this, he's talking about that. Today, don't let that go without confessing that to God. Don't let this time slip by without talking to someone about what it means to move past that and get over it. Maybe today, as Nate sings, you just want to come up to the front and you want to kneel down and pray and say, God, I give this to you. I don't want to be in chains to it anymore. Maybe you need to find someone, go to them and say, will you pray with me? Will you help me? Maybe you want to slip to the back and talk with someone about what's going on in your life or that situation. I don't know how God will lead you, but I know he leads us to response because he does not want us chained. Let's worship him and respond. Not always true, but most of the time they at least give us a general look into the reality of our situations. If we know that the vast majority of people that live in the culture we live in are not content, the vast majority of the people that live in our culture are not happy with where they're at, they don't feel free, they don't feel like they have real life, then it is our responsibility as followers of Jesus Christ to live an abundant life that will pour out of us and into those around us. And it is absolutely impossible to live that kind of abundant life if we are in chains to sin. So my prayer for you this week is that you will be able to look in the mirror and honestly say, I want to live a life today that lives for Jesus. Not for the hidden desires, not for the selfish wants, but a life that is lived in abundance in Christ, so that I may affect the world around me in such a way that they too might find life. Many of us today, we may have sat quietly and talked with God about something, but many of us need to take a step beyond that. Many of us need to confess. We We may need to confess to God. We may need to confess to somebody that we've hurt and we've wronged. It may be a roommate, maybe somebody in your class, maybe it's somebody at work, maybe somebody in your house that you've treated wrongly, and because of it, it's damaged that relationship, and you're now in bondage to this junk that's going on. Life is too short, way too short, to let that go a day without dealing with it, because it hinders us, it chains us from living the abundant life that God's called us to. I hope you have a great, great week living that life. One quick announcement before you go. The lead team meeting that was going to happen tonight is not going to happen. There's been a couple things pop up. If anybody has any questions about that, come see me. I'll let you know that, those of you that were a part of that. But not happening tonight. I'll send you an email so you know what's going on. Have a great week. We'll see you back next Sunday.